How do you grow your franchise system? For sure, we have to sell franchises and we want to have good unit economics. But no matter the size of your franchise system, whether you're a startup, an emerging brand, or a thriving, mature franchise system, now's a moment, a time to evaluate your why, your core values, your team. And this includes you, even if you're a brand new franchisor. This is so often overlooked and is probably the biggest catalyst or the biggest differentiator between successful growing franchise systems and those that never gain traction. We're going to discuss it in detail. Dave, I've been waiting to do this together. It's Dave Galati from Emerscale. And Dave works with so many emerging franchisors and really gets under the hood and into the strategic planning. And just between our conversations together, Dave, I'm so excited about what you bring to the table in terms of strategy, planning, culture. I thought this would be a perfect topic for our subscribers, which is we want to build a winning franchise system. And what's the strategy, the foundational strategy to put in place in terms of team and culture? So I know we're gonna go through all this, but Dave, it's awesome doing this together.
Yeah, Charles, obviously we've known each other for a few years and worked with several mutual clients together, serving them well and with excellence. And I've always been a big fan of what you guys do and what you represent. And I'm excited to have the opportunity to share a bit of what kind of we do and what I feel like the gifts that we have as an organization. And my personal passion is people strategy. And there's a lot of different components to it. Happy to walk through some of it, share some wisdom and knowledge, and hopefully it'll be helpful to the listeners.
Yeah, Dave. So, right. We work with so many mutual brands and it's always great. I love just having the conversations, not only for our clients, but for my own strategic planning for our firm. There's so many franchisors out there. They become a franchisor. They're selling franchises. Things aren't right. You've seen the difference. The brands that propel and grow to a special level and the brands that get stuck. And it's not necessarily because they don't have the right team or they don't have a great product, service, or brand. There's something different. And for me, it always points back to strategy, team, and culture. And this is your expertise. So how do you work with franchisors? And more importantly, what's the advice and how do you get them to focus on a winning strategy?
Yeah, so a lot of times the franchisors, when they're emerging, when they're coming out of running, you know, a proven corporate organization, maybe have one or two franchisees that they've tested the concept out and proven the unit level economics out, and they start to scale. The first thing that they struggle with is making the transition from, you know, being a business operator to being a franchisor, which is a hugely different distinction. A lot of times they'll have team members that are very well skilled at working in the business, understanding the business, but they don't understand franchising. And it truly, as you know, is a different animal. It's a different business. So I always say to anybody that's getting started and really wants to ramp up and scale using a franchise model, you are no longer in the business that you've been in. You are in the franchise business. You are a franchisor. And that starts a different whole perspective. And so when we talk about, you know, people strategy specifically, a lot of times franchisors have great strategy around, you know, how are we going to deliver the service and what's our differentiation in the marketplace? And hey, we've got some scalable systems and processes. And so we feel like we've proven our business model, but the thing that's unproven is the people side of the business. And so, you know, Peter Drucker once said, you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast, right? And the idea is that a rock solid culture, a people culture, actually is part of the strategy. Like, you cannot execute an overall business strategy without the right people in the right seats. And you know, Charles, I'm an EOS guy. Your company runs on EOS. And so some of the stuff I'll talk about has kind of the EOS language. But, you know, going back to Vern Harnish and scaling up and, you know, good to great and Jim Collins, you know, there's nothing new under the sun here. It's, you know, EOS is more of a collaboration and accumulation of various thoughts in a simplified methodology, right? And so when we talk about the fundamental piece that the franchisor needs to understand, is he needs to have the right people in the right seats. And it starts with culture. And so, you know, core values, is, you know, it's been a buzzword. Oh, we need to get core values. Look, core values are not something that you put on a poster and a wall. It's something that's in your heart and in the minds of your team members. It's something that embodies the organization. It's what you actually make strategic decision based on. Is there alignment with the strategy, with our core values? And if there isn't, there's always going to be some disunification there. There's always going to be some tension, because if a strategy is not in alignment with core values, or the core values are not in alignment with strategy, there's no synergy. And it's very hard to execute. And it's also hard to create a clear vision for what you want to do. You know, there's a thing, you know, a Bible quote says, you know, where there is no vision, the people perish, right? It's this idea of, without a clear vision, you cannot be successful. You cannot scale, because people don't understand what to expect. And so I think the biggest part is looking at your organization first and saying, what are our core values? And even though we may have them, a lot of people have them, are we actually living them out? You know, we talk about different types. Patrick Lencioni talks about core values as being kind of the core values, but then most core values that companies have are actually aspirational values. They're things they wish they were. And what happens is, when you kind of operate under wishful thinking, everybody knows it's not really a core value. It's something we wish we could be, but we're not. Like, if you're a company that says, well, we want to have integrity, but yet you'll do a deal at any cost and you don't care, you'll step over things to get things done, and it's a Machiavellian kind of ends justify the means, is really the functional way you operate your business, then that's not really a core value. It's hypocrisy. And a lot of times what happens is, if people come in and believe, oh, I'm going to be a part of a company that has integrity, and then they see there's no integrity and there's no accountability to integrity, then there's a disconnect. And people get disenfranchised, and it creates a level of disunity and dysfunction in the organization. And so there's an idea of building a team that you have people that are in alignment with your core values, but then they're also in the right seat. There needs to be a defining piece of not just the titles that people have, but the roles and the accountability that they have, right? What are they accountable for in the organization that will drive the business forward? And who are they accountable to within the organization, right? And so accountability is a huge piece of any culture. If you're going to have a healthy team culture, that has to be trust, transparency, authenticity, and accountability. And if you don't have any of those things, or you're missing a couple of pieces, you're going to have an organization that's always grinding against something. Again, you can set up the best systems and processes, the best branding, the best marketing strategy, but if your people are not aligned and you don't have synergy at the people level, you will not effectively scale your business. You will struggle, you will fight, and you will run up against all sorts of issues that are solved only by addressing the people problems.
We're going to backcast a little. Startup franchisor, emerging franchisor, there's at certain elements panic. It's like, Dave, I get all this. I get what you're saying. I don't even have a big team. It's me and X person. And right now, we just need to sell some franchises because we have cash burn, or we have these other concerns. And I think we all go through that as entrepreneurs, and then we start leaping to action or thinking we have to sell or do things. So team big or small, let's assume I'm a team of two or three, but I need to understand the pathway ahead over the next 1, 2, 3, 5 years. When you look at successful franchise systems as they're scaling, what's the advice of, hey, this is what success should feel like in terms of, these are key players to be onboarding or key roles you're initially going to satisfy? And then what do you see as that framework?
Oh, absolutely. So first of all, any organization needs a visionary and an integrator, right? So the CEO, COO, even if you don't have those titles, there has to be somebody that's constantly casting the vision, and they are constantly reinforcing what the business needs to look like. There needs to be an individual. Now, this can sometimes be the same person. You know, Charles, an entrepreneur, when you start out, you got to wear all the hats, right? And so the idea is, you got to have the visionary part of your brain and the integrator part of your brain. And the innovator is the one that takes the vision, brings it down to earth, and actually activates it and gets it actually moving, right? So there has to be that kind of dynamic. Even if it's one person doing both, there has to be a distinction in the roles that the one person's doing, right? And then the other thing is, you want to look at your operationally. You need somebody that's going to lead the operations. So whether it's director of franchise operations, VP of franchise operations. Now, a smaller company is going to start, and they're going to do, that VP operations will do everything, right? They'll do onboarding, they'll do training, they'll do launching, they'll do ongoing support. They'll provide all that infrastructure directly to the franchisees as they start selling franchisees. Now, in some cases, you know, right when you're starting, you got the visionary integrators, one person, you got to get another person that can handle the day-to-day operations. If as a franchisor, the founder CEO cannot handle all of those three roles at once. Okay. So you need somebody out in the field working with the franchisees, onboarding them, training them, supporting them. All right. You also need a finance component. You need somebody that's going to have the ability, you know, somebody that's more than just a bookkeeper that can understand the transactional dynamics. And you know this, you deal with franchise agreements, right? Money coming in, deposit, how that money is actually allocated, right? And obviously, you know, the deferral process around some things, right? Understanding state laws, somebody that can handle the finance. Now, that person might be outsourced to start. You can hire a fractional CFO or a controller. Firms do that. There's a lot of folks that do that. But you need somebody that's going to be accountable for the financial. Again, that's not the founder CEO, all right? Then you need somebody that's going to provide sales and marketing leadership. Now, we're talking about two sides of it, right? You've got franchise development part of it, the franchise selling piece, and that can either be done in-house or outsourced through an FSO or various, you know, there's lots of freelance development people that you can kind of come in and hire them on a you know, per diem or, you know, results-based, performance-based program. So this, again, doesn't necessarily have to be an in-house person. Now, if you're a founder CEO and you've got the operational and the finance piece, sometimes the founder CEO can be in that kind of sales development role for the, you know, for the franchise selling, but you need somebody that's going to lead the marketing function. And that's a fully distinct function that of marketing the franchise system. So these are folks that are going to work directly with your franchisees on unit level marketing, brand building, how they're going to generate leads, right? That's a critical piece of this, especially in any kind of business. You need leads to make sales to drive revenue. And so those are the core, like if I'm just getting started, I need three or four people, it's that kind of structure. Now, as you scale on the operation side, you're going to have like onboarding specialists, training specialists, launch specialists, you know, as you scale up, franchise business coaches that can work directly with the franchisees. That's all going to be in the franchise operations. On the marketing side, you can have, you know, SEO, SEM, you know, third party outsourced marketing agency that can again and help support the scale of that. On the franchise development side, again, you can build continued infrastructure there as you scale and you bring on more capacity that you need. And then on the finance side, then, hey, now we're going to go from maybe a full, you know, fractional to full-time, or we'll get a staff accountant or some bookkeepers. So it's really a simplified model. You don't have to overcomplicate it, and you certainly don't want to overhire, because when you overhire, you know, it's very hard to get to profitability with, as a franchisor. And if you're overspending because you have too much capacity at the people level, it's going to be very hard for you to scale profitably over time. So you want to be very strategic. You don't want to fall behind to the point where you don't have enough people to support your growing system, but you don't want to hire and basically wait for the business to come. That answer your question?
Yeah, it does. I mean, and for everyone who's listening, I mean, that's a great overview of, like, that's an evolution over time of, you know, it's going to start off maybe two people in a franchise system, right? But I think it's important to hear and understand all these roles that are going to come into play and be handled over time. Dave, two brands, same industry, same financial numbers, one scales and grows, one stagnates. One is clear messaging, the other, it's secondary, confused messaging. One gains interest by brokers, the other's just not gaining traction there. Organic sales and interest are happening. Now, I know there's going to be a ton of variables, but at the leadership level, core value level, what do you see as under the hood differences when you look at those brands?
Yeah, it's all about the passion, and the alignment that the team has, right? So there's this idea that high functioning teams, unified teams, alignment with core values, the sum of the parts is greater than the individual pieces, okay? If you are a franchisor and you don't feel, if you've got a team of three and it doesn't feel like six, there's something wrong with your culture, your people, they're not motivated, they're not encouraged, they're not in alignment with the value, they don't have clarity on the values, they don't know where they're going. People, especially millennials that are generally going to come in a lot of these, you know, positions, they're rising up through the ranks in franchising, lots of millennials, they need to feel like they're part of a purpose and a mission beyond just the service that's being delivered to the clients. There has to be a bigger purpose, a why, and then alignment around that why. And people that are not bought into that why need to come off the bus, right? So this is all about alignment, getting the right people in the right seats, and alignment with the vision and the values of the company and the mission beyond just delivering the service. That's the key differentiator. Because what happens is you just get so much more output from people when they're like that. They will run through a wall. And it's not about compensation. You compensate them fairly, but they're not going to leave. You know, if they're a $75,000 employee, they're not going to leave for $78,000 or $80,000. They're going to stay. Why? Because they're bought in. The other thing is making sure they feel valued. Okay. The old kind of command and control and kind of my way or the highway leadership is not working. It's not working. It doesn't work anymore. So leaders, and I work with a lot, I do a lot of one-on-one coaching with founder CEOs, that we work through mindset mentality changes where they empower, they encourage, they don't coddle, right? They don't, you know, go easy and just to be nice. No. This is firm but fair. This is setting the expectations, holding the bar high, giving them the tools they need to succeed, and then holding them accountable to that success and holding themselves accountable. That's the other thing. Accountability starts at the top and moves down. Those kinds of organizations, those are the ones, all things else equal, are the ones that are exceeding and succeeding way beyond just another company that might just, hey, we're okay, everybody's good, you know, nothing great. It's the people.
We had our leadership quarterly meeting 2 weeks ago or a week ago. And as our team has grown, I've seen the need, like we need a full team meeting. And so following our leadership team meeting, I spent the day putting together a presentation for the full team. And at the beginning, I felt lost because sometimes you lose track of things. I was honing in on the why, how, why. And it's so powerful when you really focus on your why. And you need to be reminded. What blew me away, Dave, a couple of months ago, I conducted reviews one-on-one with our team members. And, you know, right before I'm like Googling, what are good questions to ask during a review? There were some good ones. One was, what do you love about working with this organization, this company? And what do you not like? And the love part, the answers really were revolving around the why. Mm-hmm. And the mission, always do. That entrepreneurial
always
mission.
Do, Charles. Always. And as leaders, as CEOs and founders, if we're not cognizant of that and we lose sight of that, then we're at a strategic disadvantage. If we do a SWOT analysis, it's a weakness and it's a threat. Because the threat is somebody's going to come in with a why that's pronounced and take your talent. Because again, it's not even money. It's wanting to be a part of something that matters and they feel like they are a part of fulfilling the why.
You know, I love that, you know, it takes me a while to connect dots, Dave. And I love this conversation. And now for the franchisors, when you're thinking about your why, we're talking about building up a compelling team.
That's right.
But also when you have that powerful why, I mean, it's not marketing. It's genuine and your actions need to follow it, but your communications with brokers and franchisee candidates, everything's amplified. And when we speak with franchise buyers, sure, they want unit economics, but they want to believe in that bigger mission and bigger good.
Yeah. And all things equal, if they're looking at two concepts and, you know, the item 9Ts look the same and they're getting similar financial validation, the thing that is going to set that apart, not only with, you know, being, you know, say you come to a confirmation day, you see that energy within the team, right? It's contagious and it's, you can't control it. It's just real. It's authentic. It's organic. But then even as they look at other concepts, they're going to pick you because they feel like more connected, or here's the other part, or they won't. And so that actually helps the franchisor because they self-select where if they're not in alignment with your values, your culture, what your mission is and the why beyond the transactional stuff, not having to be a part of your system it's a blessing in disguise. It's not just a transaction. You want to build partnerships with like-minded people, right? So it's an opportunity to have a self-selection because people either resonate with it or they won't, and it's okay either way.
Dave, when you're working with franchisors and there's the why is missing, or they're not seeing it, or there's something off organizationally, what are some of the signals or symptoms you see when there is no clarity on their why?
Well, there's two types that I see of like where there's no whys in an organization. One is the founder CEO has it in their brain, but they haven't communicated it effectively. And so here's the biggest thing. A lot of times I'll hear, well, we have core values and we have mission vision. Well, how often do you talk about it? Well, it's over there on the wall. Well, how often do you talk about it? Well, I not a lot. Do you know them? Could you recite them? Often, well, no. Well, here's the big idea, and it's an EOS term. It's called cascading messages. The visionary, and again, if you're a CEO and you're wearing multiple hats, the visionary hat that you wear, the one of the biggest things that you have to do is cascade the vision, mission, value constantly. And I remember I always get, well, these are adults. They're going to think I'm crazy if I say it like every day. No. They're not going to think you're crazy. They're going to think this guy sold out and he's all in, and I want to be a part of this, or I don't. And either way is good. Because then you'll be able to bring someone in that does. Cascade, it's a continual thing, continual. And more, even one step next to that, the leader has to be the one that points out when they are not upholding, like they need to be the chief repenter in charge, because that's leading from out front. What that's saying is, hey guys, none of us are perfect. I don't expect we're perfect, but we're going to hold each other accountable to our core values. And when we do things and we make decisions that are counter to that, I'm going to be the first one that owns that. When you do that, everything opens up, right? So it's this idea of I either don't have them because I don't value them, right? And in that case, nobody's going to value them. I work with a fantastic concept. If I told you the name, everybody think they're the biggest success in the last 5 years in franchising. And the CEO just did not buy into any of this. And he built an organization that's ultimately very dysfunctional. Lots of turnover, lots of great talent has left to other franchise systems, and they can't understand why they can't be acquired, and they're kind of just stuck in limbo. All right, that's what's going on with a CEO that just didn't value that stuff. It's too touchy-feely. People just come for a paycheck. If you have that mindset, you're setting yourself up to fail, regardless of whether your concept is a unicorn or not. And this was a unicorn concept we're talking about, Charles. And but yet I've worked with others that are fully committed, all in, and it's taken them time to get there, and they've kind of learned and grown and been uncomfortable and getting to, because it takes a little bit of uncomfortability to be authentic and transparent and real and all those things and vulnerable as a leader. But when they do, the rewards are just exponential. And smaller teams have gone out and conquered franchising. Even though they're not uniform, they've been very, and Charles, companies like this, we work together with a couple of them. You know that good, healthy culture, good people doing good things consistently over time, people come, they stay, they want to be a part of something. So again, to answer that question, it's either they don't have a taste for it, they don't want to do it, to their, or they want to do it and they've tried to do it, they just can't do it, they just don't know what it looks like to execute it. So my job is to try to work them through that process.
Well, and one of our mutual clients, I was with Ken Parsons, Brothers Just Do Gutters, a couple of weeks ago. We were at a conference together. I mean, from the start, they, Ken and Ryan, culture driven, value driven, amazing people. What struck me too, which was eye opening, we were speaking and he was giving advice to new franchisors. And he said, also, you should be thinking about now. He goes, I think about what does it look like years from now when my franchisee sells their business and the value that affords to their family. And I think the power there too is everything you're discussing with core values and vision in building that amazing team and franchise system, it needs to be there for the franchisees because in many ways they form the fabric of that franchise.
100%. There's no such thing as a successful franchisor without successful franchisees. It will never happen. And even as franchisors think about what their exit might look like, the fact that they're cognizant of what an exit might look like for a franchisee is that direct connection. it's that belief, you know, Zig Ziglar used to say, if you help enough people get what they want, you will get what you want, right? That mindset, where the idea is, if we can get $1 million valuation franchisees, well, we know that that's going to make, you know, our valuation 5, 10x that, whatever that might be, right? So the idea is, it's an and both. It's not at the expense of the franchisees. It's because of the franchisees. It's because of the franchisees. And I think that is critical. And I've had the opportunity to lead some mastermind groups and have, you know, Ryan Parsons around the table there. And just, he exemplifies that. They exemplify this attitude that the franchisees are first. And again, lots of others that we can give examples to. But, you know, the idea is it's kind of in their DNA, right? It's just kind of how they're wired. Now, it doesn't always have to start in your DNA. You can learn it. It is something that's learned. And I've seen it happen. I've seen founder CEOs get this. The light bulb goes off and they begin to embrace it. And the good thing about this is that when you start doing it and it's real and it's authentic, you always get positive reinforcement around it. You always get it because it's that positive. It's not like negativity can come from a positive thing. Now, does it mean early on you're going to, you know, lose some tension and, oh, this is kind of weird, or, you know, why we're going in a different direction? But once it sticks, oh my gosh, it stays.
Look, getting to that example too. I mean, Ryan and Ken started off with a team, maybe 2, 3, 4 people. And when you see, again, when I was with Ken, if you mention a book, he is either quoting that book or he's saving it to go buy it and read it.
Yeah.
And so it's none of us, like, that's what I love about entrepreneurship. It's a learning lesson. It's a life lesson. It's like a journey. And if you're genuine about it and pure in what you're thinking about and a greater good, you focus on how do I make more money and grow a business. But what you're going to find out is it has to do with improving who you are and improving the lives of others. And it's amazing.
That's right. That's 100% Dave, right.
So, right. And I love it because you work with, you know, we bump into each other so much because you're working with so many successful brands and Emerscale and the things you're doing. For those that are watching this video now, whether they reach out to you and say, hey, Dave, I know you're always willing to just have a great conversation, or may never, what would be some advice you give now if you were working together, or even if you weren't? And I'm an emerging startup franchisor. Maybe I'm a team of 3 people. Maybe we have, you know, 2 franchises. What would be your advice to me of, hey, Charles, whether we work together or not, here's what I want you to baseline, and here's what you need to start thinking about.
Yeah, and again, we'll get back to what I said earlier. It's really, what I would do is I would do a people analyze. First thing we do is do a people analyze with the team, right? And so whatever the team is, and that would include analyzing the CEO. And, you know, the people analyzer, it's an EOS concept. So it's all about right person, right seat. So the right person is, you know, is there alignment in the core values? If the core values aren't there, you got to get those, because then you have alignment around it. So even backing it up. So if you don't have core values, you got to get it. And then you got to assess alignment with the core values. Here's the truth, guys. Every business has core values, whether they're stated or not. And so if you ask your teams what you think our core values are, they're going to tell you. And you got to let them be honest, because some of them might not be good. And my family motto growing up was the Hippocratic Oath. You know, my mother, you know, chain smoking cigarettes. David, you never better smoke. Well, Mom, you smoke. Well, do as I say, not as I do, right? Like that kind of mindset, you know, growing up in the 70s, that was the thing. That won't work, right? So you got to be somebody that has the character around that. So that would be the first thing, is making sure you got the right people and then right seats relative to the work that you're asking them to do. You got to ask 3 questions and you got to answer yes to all 3. Do they get it? Do they get the role, the responsibility that's being acted? Do they understand what the expectations are? Do they get it, right? Do they want it, right? Do they want to succeed? Do they want to get up? Do they want to win? Do they want it? Or do they got to get up? I have to go to work. I have to do this because my boss says, you don't want to have 2 people. You want 2 people. All right. And the last thing is capacity to do it. Capacity is a couple things. One, it's like ability. Can they actually do the job? Are they wired the right way? If it's a sales job, can they sell? Do they know how to pick up the phone and call somebody? Right. If they can't do that, they don't have the capacity, the ability to do that. right? If you're asking them to be administrative, organized, detail oriented, and they're all over them, all over the place, right? They don't have the capacity to do that job, whether they want to do it or not. And then the other part of capacity is, do they have the capacity to do it within the time that needs to be done, right? So if you're expecting, hey, this is what I need, you know, every week, 40, 50 hours a week, and it takes them 100 hours, and they don't have capacity. You have to be honest. Get it, want it, capacity to do it. Now, here's the deal. Getting it and capacity are two things you can coach, train. Hey, I don't get it because you haven't trained me. I don't have capacity because I don't understand what you're expecting, right? So as a franchisor, as a leader, we have to bring clarity, and we have to make sure they understand what's expected and what winning looks like, right? The one thing you can't coach is the want to. People either have the want to or they don't, right? Angela Duckworth, we use the grit assessment, right? It's this kind of grittiness. You have to have gritty grinder type of people. Franchising is not easy. It's not for the faint of heart, okay? It's a lot. There's a lot going on in franchising. So you need people that have that want to. They want to get out. They want to serve franchisees. They want to grow. They want to learn. And so that's the first thing you got to do with your organization before you do anything, is assess where you are there. And if you realize that you don't have the right people in the right seat, or maybe even as the founder, you're doing things that ultimately you don't get, you don't want, or you don't have the capacity to do, you need to find people that can do those things. You need to complement yourself. The thing I find a lot, especially in smaller franchisors, is there's three or four people, and they all think like the founder, and everybody's frustrated because they're bringing in like-minded people rather than complementary pieces that people do, right? So the other part is you need to do assessments. You need to do a DISC assessments, or a Myers-Briggs, or the new one by the Table Group Lencioni, the Working Genius. It's a fantastic assessment. I highly recommend it. What it does is it talks about kind of how people are successful in the types of work that get done. And so it talks about, you know, wonder and invention, you know, kind of the vision stuff, right? And then there's this galvanizing and discerning piece in the middle. And then there's the execution. And so what I find a lot of times is organizations will miss, hey, we've got vision and we know how to throw new stuff on the wall and we know how to get people excited, but we've got no one to land the plane. We don't have the enablement and tenacity piece of it. We can't get projects over the finish line. We're stuck. And so understanding organizational weakness relative to the kind of how people work is a huge piece of it. So you really got to do the diligence on the people side up front. And then from there, everything else can fall into place. Now you can apply systems and processes. Now you can say, all right, here's what everybody's doing relative to their role, because everybody gets it, wants it, has the capacity to do it. And then again, as the CEO, the founder, you've got to cast the vision, the why, the core values. Those are the things. If you start there, you'll be off and running in a successful way. And it might require you to rip things out and start over. But the best part of this, it's always great. And I always tell my clients, this is the perfect time to do it, right? The old adage, when was the best time to plant a tree? 20 years ago? When's the next best time? Today. So you have the opportunity today to reset things if they're not right. So take an honest assessment, do the people analyzer, assess your core values. If you don't have them, get them. Include your team in the conversations. Make sure you got the right people in the right seats, and you're on your way.
Yeah, it's great advice. And I mean, for everyone listening, I mean, even before this, you were talking with some of our team and about us working together. And one of our weaknesses, not a weakness, is evaluating that from a qualitative standpoint, that organizational flow of work. Because we have amazing team members, culture-driven, values-driven, but I think at a leadership level, I may have sort of overlooked that. Dave,
You know what it is, Charles, as leaders, and I do this, I have a small team that I lead as well. We assume people are reading our minds. We assume because we are open and authentic and we don't have anything to hide, right? Like people just automatically know. They don't. That's where that constant cascading needs to come in, right?
And it's shocking because the moment you get a glimpse into, you think everything is, there's clarity and people do know, and then you realize, wow, they don't. It blows you away. There's just so many good leadership lessons.
Here's another way to look at it. And I use this with my clients a lot because it helps to get perspective. So you have kids, right? Especially younger kids, right? And I've got a 10 or 13 year old, so I'm kind of still in this, hopefully coming out of it a little bit. How many times do you tell them to clean their room, to brush their teeth, to make their bed. Don't eat cookies before dinner, right? You just don't tell them once. You tell them every single day, multiple times a day. Why? Because it reinforces the message. Well, the pushback I always get is, well, they're not, my employees aren't kids. They're adults. Okay. They still need that. When you want people to respond in a certain way, you have to consistently deliver that. And then guess what happens? The bed gets made. And, you know, the cookie jar is still full before dinner, right? Those things happen because there's a communication. And here's the thing. We don't do it in anger. We don't do it in frustration. We do it because it's our job. That's our job. It's our job as parents, right? So even with my kids, I laugh. I joke about it. Time to do, and they get it. So it's not this mean, angry. It's this, we're accountable to these things. And here's the thing. When I make a mistake as a father or a business leader, I own it. I screwed up here. I made a mistake. So the next time somebody else makes a mistake, they feel safe to say, yeah, I made a mistake too. That's the biggest thing. Like, we've got to own our stuff. And if we own our stuff, we'll have others own their stuff. We've got to lead from out front. And that's really the biggest message I give all my CEO clients. You have to lead from out front. It's not two sets of standards. It's one set of standards. How do you want your company to run? You need to lead by example.
Yeah, and there's such a multiple. Because now you have a chain of franchisees. This reverberates through. Dave, I appreciate it. We have some amazing subscribers and clients and everyone, you know, our community on this channel. And guys, I could tell you, Dave's a genuine person. If you have any questions, you know, we'll have information on here and reach out to Dave. I've enjoyed every conversation. I'm inspired when we get off the calls, and I'm inspired right now. So, Dave, I appreciate it so much.
Yeah, Charles, listen, one of our main things is to help first. It's actually an EOS mantra. We want to help first. And so we offer a complimentary 1-hour, you know, franchisor scale assessment. We ask, you know, questions to kind of get to understand where you're at, where the pain points are. And my commitment is and it's never been proven wrong, and hopefully we'll continue that streak, is that it's not a sales pitch. It's, wow, I left feeling like I understand more about my business and myself. I've got some actionable items that I can kind of, little nuggets that I can take away. And then there'll be an understanding of, you know, potentially where our capabilities and capacity is to help or not. I have a very open hand. You know, you've gotten to know me. I'm very open handed. We are just starting to kind of get into more branding and, you know, re-logoing and just kind of really scaling up. But our core pretense is to always help people, to try to add value to the franchisor community. Unfortunately, like any place in the world, you know, there's some bad actors in our business, as you know. And I've just committed myself to just being a good guy in the business. And whether I work with people or not, I always try to leave them with something where they feel that I've given some value to them. And that's our commitment. One of our core values is under promise, over deliver. And we try to live by that every day. We try to make sure we're constantly checking in on expectations. Are we meeting or exceeding expectations with our clients? We ask the question, are we meeting expectations? And we freely welcome feedback. So we're very open-handed. We love to help people. But I also learned a long time ago, you can't force someone to do something. So we are not, there's no, you know, aggressive sales stuff we do. Because here's the thing, unless people want to change, unless they want to implement new things and you know do things in a way that we know is a proven methodology, then why would you force someone to do that, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and you know this too, right? You work with clients like that. It's like, it's not always a fit, right? You get into it and kind of, hey, the way we run our business is not always the way others run their business. And that's okay. There's no judgment. But I like to look for synergy in people. We build relationships. So we come in, and our goal as consultants is to be like ninjas. We come in, we don't stay longer than we need to. We actually get in and roll up our sleeves. So we're not just consultants and you're just telling all the things you need to do. We try to help you execute. We are fractional integrators. We help move rocks and solve issues. We have some unique product offerings that we do that are scalable. There's some really good business solutions that'll help you scale. And so those are the things that we do. And we've kind of found a niche within the franchise world, right? And we're not, I think we've been serving them well. And we've been fortunate to grow over the last few years as we do that.
Dave, I appreciate that. And I'll just add, what's great is you have a perspective of what success looks like, because you do work with successful franchisors. And you do also know the industry, so in a very deep way. So, yeah, I appreciate it, Dave, and I appreciate the time today.
You too, Charles. Always a pleasure, and I look forward to having future conversations.